coming from Hawkwind, and I'm very, very pleased to welcome into the studio this evening Simon King, one of the drummers. Hello.
Hello.
That's your latest single, right?
Yeah.
But from your latest single, I want to go right back to the beginning now. How long has Hawkwind been together?
As Hawkwind, about 6 years.
What do you mean, as Hawkwind?
Well, before Hawkwind, there was Hawkwind Zoo and Brand X, I think it was called.
Yeah.
And that was Nick and Dave. They're the only two that are with us now, or around then.
Yeah. Have you had a lot of lineup changes?
A fair amount, yeah. A lot in the early days, not so many recently.
Do you think, when you had all the lineup changes, did they affect the sound of Hawkwind very much?
Yeah, to a certain degree. Everybody who's come in has always, adds their own sort of touch. And I think it's improved every time we've had a change.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. I'm sure.
It's new blood, you know, it gives everybody a bit more energy.
Yeah. Simon, how long is it since you joined Hawkwind?
About 4.5 years.
So you've been quite a long spell, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, right. I got in just before Silver Machine.
Yeah. And there are two drummers, aren't there?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Very well, actually. Very well. It works well because Alan himself, very old friends anyway, we're both rock and rollers, but we play slightly different style, and his strong points, my weak points, and vice versa. And we use a lot of percussion now, so one of us would be sort of taking the, say, the workload, you know, and the beat, and the other's doing the frills and bits in between, keeping the rhythms
going. And do you
going.
Swap around?
Yeah, swap about, get cross rhythms going. And got, you know, the last guy to join is a new bass player, Paul Rudolph, and he really is a dynamite bass player, and it's really beginning to shape up now.
Well, a few minutes ago you mentioned Silver Machine, right?
Yeah.
Which was about the time you joined, so I think we ought to hear that track. Mm-hmm. Silver Machine, how long is it since that was recorded? You can really tell the difference in the sound, can't you, between that one and the single that we heard before that?
Yeah, right. Well, that cut was recorded live at the Roundhouse. And there's only myself, Nick and Dave, who are with us now, who were on that.
Yeah, so it really shows, as you were mentioning before, that new members really do influence
yeah,
the
right,
sound.
Yeah, then yeah. it was a lot raw, a lot rougher.
Simon, what did you do before you joined Hawkwind?
Well, I'd played in various bands, you know, no one special, just playing around town. That's the way I got the gig with Hawkwind was I'd been playing in a band for quite a while with Lemmy, who's a bass player, or was a bass player when I was done. And bumped into him one day, wandering through Ladbroke Grove, says, oh, we need a drummer for tonight, you know, Terry's ill. I said, well, you know, I could do it. Need the money, need the gig. So I did it, and it just all, you know, that came about. And that was only a couple of months before that was recorded. So I was quite lucky.
Yeah, not a bad break, really.
No, you're right.
Would you say that over the years, any particular musician or group of musicians have influenced Hawkwind as a whole?
No, I don't think so. Everybody in the band's is influenced by different people. I think it's just collectively. There's a lot of people we all like, you know. Say, Steve Miller, who in fact we wanted him to produce the new album. Our time schedule and his time schedule couldn't work in. He wanted a lot of money anyway. So we ended up producing a new one ourselves.
Well, speaking of this new one, let's hear a track from it now. It's called Reefer Madness.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's definitely one of those. One of those that goes wrong on stage, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it shouldn't be, but often, you know, sort of miles away doing it, you know, and everyone else stops on
the camera. You sort of look around and think, hey,
yeah.
Oh, it wasn't me.
Was it three? I thought it was four. before, you know.
Well, that's Reefer Madness, a track from your new album. When's the new album coming out?
August the 27th.
So. Oh, not long.
And on Christmas.
What's it called?
It's called Astounding Sounds and Amazing Music, or Amazing Music and Astounding Sounds.
Let's get this right.
Astounding Sounds and Amazing Music, there we go.
Right, Astounding Sounds and Amazing Music from Hawkwind, and that was a brief track from it, and we're going to hear some more before I let you go, because it sounds nice. I'm going to ask you a bit of a sticky one now, possibly, but you have been described as, and I quote, prime innovators of space rock. How would you define space rock as opposed to progressive rock? I mean, what's it mean?
I don't really know. It's a sort of label that we've been given by other people, more than a label we've given ourselves. I mean, it's rock and roll with a lot of spacey effects, synthesizers, and spacey lyrics and a lot of things. You know, I don't think it's anything really too new, you know, or anything different from progressive rock.
Yeah, so instead of singing about kissing and cuddling and all that sort of thing, you're
about flying through the sky or something. You know?
And why not?
Why not, indeed?
How long would you say you've been singing space rock, then?
Oh, always. All the time.
Always. Would you say that, let's see, Urban Gorilla, would you say that was that sort of thing?
Not quite in the same vein. There's a bit unfortunate about Urban Gorilla, because Bob had written the lyrics to that, Bob Kelver, written the lyrics to that a good few years before it was recorded, or before we'd even started playing it. And we did it as a sort of follow-up single to Silver Machine, and it had been out a couple of weeks. It was, you know, getting plays, it was doing okay. And then they had all the London bombs, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a bit unfortunate, the lyrics in it say, you know, I'm Urban Gorilla, make bombs in my cellar. Well, of course, you know, certain radio establishment refused to play it because of that. We thought, well, it's a bit of a sort of bad scene. So we got together with the record company and decided it was probably better to take it off the market. So it came off the market about 3 weeks after it had been released.
It must be one of the briefest singles.
Yeah, but so we've, you know, now put it on the new Road Orcs compilation album.
Well, I think we ought to give it another spin,
yeah,
don't you?
Now.
Right, Urban Gorilla. Back to 1973 with that one. Well, Simon, I think from 73 we're going to leap right forward now to 1976. And not talk about music, but there's a new science fiction book coming out with you as the subject, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. It's a Mike Moorcock sort of idea. Mike Moorcock science fiction writer. And Mike Butterworth sort of actually wrote it, and he's done it around the sort of, it's sort of like the end of the world final rock and roll concert, and he's used us as the characters in it, you know, everybody's like, it's you know, Lord so and so and Count Rock, you know, and it gives everybody a part, and I've yet to read it, I've read a little bit of it.
Get to read that, I think. Oh, that surprises me. If I was a subject in the book, I think the first thing I'd do is read it.
Well, I'm a bit worried about what you might say. You know?
Oh, you coward. It's called Time of the Hawk Lords.
Yeah.
So you're the Hawk Lords, presumably.
Yeah, we're all Hawk Lords and all that.
Did they ask you about it before they actually went ahead and did it? Did they ask if you'd mind?
Well, they didn't ask all of us. Mike Moorcock is an old friend of ours. We've worked with him before. He's written stuff for us, and he more or less sort of went ahead and did it. I don't think he thought we'd know.
And you don't?
We don't. Do it.
Are you going to be featuring this at all in your tour that's coming up soon?
Not really. No, the tour's sort of all built around the new album, you know, it's a complete new stage show.
Yeah.
New visuals. Instead of just the light show that we had before, it's a screen split into three with all special effects. and some new sort of toys and new goodies.
Oh, blimey. Right. Oh, blimey. But music will all be from your new album?
Yeah, most of it. Like, it'll feature almost everything on the new album, a few of the old Lady Brighters. And hopefully three or four numbers that we've not yet recorded.
Oh, sounds like it's going to be a goodie.
We're looking forward to this tour. Yeah.
Are you going to be including City of Lagoons?
I should think so, yeah.
Which is a track from the new album, so let's hear it.
Okay.
City of Lagoons from your forthcoming album, Astounding Sounds, Amazing Music. You see, I know what it's called, even if you don't.
I can't remember.
Were both of you drumming on that?
Yeah, we're both playing on that. Like, Elle was doing a sort of bass drum, snare drum. And I had a beat, so he just bassed it. And I did all the sort of crash cymbal things, and then afterwards we got cymbal crashes and sort of bass and sort of echo, made them sort of spiral up, you know, zoom across on the stereo.
What will you do with that when you do it on tour?
Well, it's just the difficulty of being a bit sort of like clever with the stereo in the studio. We have trouble reproducing that on stage, but we can get by with that.
Yeah. Which do you prefer, actually playing about in the studio or doing live gigs?
Well, it's always good fun playing around in the studio, you know, and experimenting with sounds. But I think for us, anyway, the real buzz comes from doing the live gigs, getting into a tour and doing it. You know, you have your bad nights, you know, when nothing goes right. But the good nights, you really make up for it. And that's really what it's down to, going out and doing live gigs and getting the energy from it. You throw something out and you get it back, and it, you know, it happens while you're there, and you can appreciate it. And that's where you really get the buzz.
Yeah, you've did a big American tour. Was it last year? Sometime.
Yeah, we did
fairly recently. Is there a big difference between the American and the British audiences?
Well, yeah. I mean, for a start, you play it in the States. You play places that are a lot bigger. There's a lot more people there. And a lot of American audiences tend to listen more to what you're doing than a lot of the British audiences. British audiences are great, you know, they don't. They're knockout, but they tend to say, you know, really get up and stomp around more. The American audiences are more aware of what you're playing. You can get away with more things here than you can in the States. You know, if you have not such a good night in the States, they let you know. You've got to be on your toes. You know?
Yeah.
And I don't know, last British tour I did, seem to notice a lot of kids over there, a lot of younger kids these days seem to be getting very out of it these days, you know, really sort of falling about, drunk and things. I mean, that can be too good.
Oh, the youth of today, today.
I must be getting old, you know. But they're, you know, it's, in America, you know, America's so vast anyway, it's like playing sort of in three different countries anyway. You've got the East Coast, you know, Midwest, and then you've got the West Coast, and the West Coast audiences be totally different to the Midwest audiences. And you really do notice it, like, on the West Coast, they're far more laid back, you know, far more sort of, Crosby, Stills, Nash, Eagles sort of type field of things, you know, Sunshine, all the rest of it. We our strong points in the States are places like Chicago and Detroit and Cleveland, the real pits actually of places, you know, but it seems to be like the real heavy rock and roll happens in more like the sort of depressed industrial areas, pretty much the same way as it does over here. You know, you go, you come up north around here, and up to Scotland, you know, where there's a lot of sort of unemployment and things like that. Rock and roll seems to go hand in hand, you know, seems to get fun.
Have you noticed a difference in British audiences in the time that you've been with Hawkwind?
Well, when I first started playing with Hawkwind, our audiences were, say, fairly the older age bracket of sort of rock and roll audiences, but over the last few years, getting younger and younger. So I've noticed that the audiences do seem to be getting quite young, and perhaps that's not getting
it. Yeah, it's like when policemen look young, isn't it?
Right, yeah. Yeah, when you see them sort of 20-year-old cop fools, you don't feel like saying, well, listen, Sonny.
Well, let's travel right back in time now and hear a real contrast. A track that was on Hawkwind's first album. It's another one that's on the Roadhawks compilation, yeah. And it's Hurry On Sundown. Hurry On Sundown, with a very slow, unhurried ending. A great difference between that and the stuff you're doing now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that was sort of before the real sort of electronics came into the band.
Yeah.
With Simon House dabbling on his synthesizers, and, you know, that was more of the straight Hawkwind.
Now, onto the tour that you're about to start. It's in about a month now, isn't it? Somewhere.
September the 15th, it starts in Sheffield.
Do you have a lot of preparation to do before? I mean, how long have you been rehearsing?
Well, we've got the stuff from the album, which we'll be featuring. We did the Cardiff Castle gig the other week, where we've sort of featured about half of what we'll be actually playing. But the preparation for like the band isn't too involved. Before the tour starts, we'll have a few weeks away together rehearsing. The main preparation's in building all the stage settings. That's been going on for a couple of weeks now, and it will be going on probably right up till the day before the tour starts, you know, with the screens, and we're using scenery and lots of stage lighting. So that's what takes up the time and the money. And a few days before the tour will start, we'll have a couple of like complete rehearsals, you know, set it up as if it was a gig and go through everything just to make sure it's right and it is going to work.
What do you do if, I mean, when you've got such a complicated set, what do you do if on the night and you're there, all the lights break down or something?
You just hope for the best. Improvise. we learnt to handle all these dreadful things that happen to us on stage, like power going off, and it's just a case then you just have to rely on a bit of experience, you know, and help each other out.
Yeah. Well, in all the places that you're going, you're not coming to Bradford, which I think is a bit cheeky, and you're not coming to Leeds. However, you're going to be at Manchester on the 18th of September, and Sheffield, the first one, on the 15th, yeah. So they're not too far away.
No.
We'll be able to come along and have a listen and a look.
Yeah.
Tour finishes, beginning of October.
Yeah,
at
Hammersmith.
That's right. What are you doing after that?
We got a week or so off, and then we're off to Europe and take the same show over to Europe, France, Germany, Scandinavia, and promote the album there, and that'll take us up till just before Christmas. And then I just think after Christmas, go back to
sounds like you're going to be pretty exhausted by Christmas.
Well, probably, yeah. But we've not done much this last six months, so we should be able to get through it.
Yeah. Do you do exactly the same set every night, or have you got room to change it?
We do change. We work around the same sort of formula. There's certain numbers which, you know, we usually start with the same thing, always on a number that you can sort of get into, you know, to loosen up on something that everybody knows, everybody's happy with, you know, because if you get through your first number, it goes okay, you know, you feel all right for the rest of the set. There's nothing worse than doing the first number and it going all wrong. Then, you know, you spend half of the rest of the set just getting your confidence back.
Yeah, it's a bit like that doing a radio program, right, when the very first record's got a crack in it, you know.
Or sticks, yeah.
Yeah.
But we got, you know, if some shows, some audiences, you know, will really go for the rock and roll parts of it, and in which case, you know, you can suss that out, and the quieter, slower periods, you can just sort of condense a little and elongate the rock and roll, or vice versa, you know, and we still try to get into a lot of sort of jamming in numbers. Give them a set sort of pattern, but leave a space in the middle where if you want to sort of, if somebody gets into it, something nice, and goes off on it, well, we can just keep it going until it starts getting a bit shaky and take it back into the ending of it. That way, the numbers are different every night. I mean, it'd be incredibly boring to have to go out and play the same numbers the same night every night.
Let me into a trade secret now. When you do encores, you and everybody else, I suppose, are they really as ad-libbed as they look?
No, usually most bands have turn up, work out what numbers they're going to do and say, well, what number should we keep for the encore? You always pick out one that you know will go down well. You know, because the thing is, if your last numbers knock out and the rest of the set's not been too good, you can usually get away with it because people always remember what they've just heard. So you usually get a good number worked out for the encore, make it look as if it was just straight off the cuff, but it's usually worked out.
They'll leave them laughing things.
Right.
So a recap on the dates. You start off September the 15th at the City Hall in Sheffield, and then, where is it? Manchester, you'll be in Manchester on the 18th.
Yeah, the Palace.
Well, I think we're going to close on another track from your new album. So what I've got to say, really, is thank you very much, Simon, for coming in to talk to us. Yeah. Simon King from Hawkwind.
Thanks a lot. See you again.